Blog Talk Radio.
Another one to college. Don't believe in college for writing. I think it's very dangerous. I think too many professors are too opinionated and too snobbish and too intellectual. And the intellect is a great danger to creativity.
It's a
terrible danger because you begin to rationalize and make up reasons for things instead of staying with your own basic truth, who you are, what you want to be. And I've had a sign over my typewriter for 25 years now, which reads, "Don't think. You must never think at the typewriter. You must feel." And then your intellect is already buried in that feeling anyway. You collect up a lot of data. You do a lot of thinking away from your typewriter. But at the typewriter, you should be living. It should be a living experience. Just as when I'm here with you, speaking to you, you're popping all sorts of questions at me. I don't have time to think about them. I can react to them. I try to say things that are meaningful in reaction to them. If I stop and thought too long, we both of us fall asleep. And that can happen at the typewriter, too. That you, and the worst thing you do when you think is lie. You can make up reasons that are not true for the things that you did. And what you're trying to do as a creative person is surprise yourself. Find out who you really are. And try not to lie. Try to tell the truth all the time. And the only way to do this is by being very active and very emotional. And get it out of yourself. Making lists of things that you hate and things that you love. And you write about these things intensely. And when it's over, then you can think about it. Then you can look at it, well, it works or it doesn't work. Something's missing here. And then if something is missing, you go back and re-emotionalize that and start all of it to peace. But thinking is to be a corrective in our life. It's not supposed to be the center of our life. Living is supposed to be the center of our life. Being is supposed to be the center, with correctives around, which hold us like the skin holds our blood and our flesh in. But our skin is not our way of life. What the way of our living is the blood pumping through our veins. The ability to sense and to feel and to know. And the intellect doesn't really help you very much there. You get on with the business of living.
You rely heavily upon intuition.
Oh, completely. Everything of mine is intuitive. All the poetry I've written, I couldn't possibly tell you how I did it. I don't know anything about the rhythms or the schemes or the inner rhymes or any of this sort of stuff. It comes from 40 years of reading poetry and having heroes that I love. I love Shakespeare. I don't intellectualize about him. I love Gerard Manley Hopkins. I don't intellectualize about him. I love Dylan Thomas. I don't know what the hell he's writing about half the time, but he sounds good. He rings well. Let me give you an example of this sort of thing. I walked into my living room, 20 years ago, when one of my daughters was about 4 years old, and a Dylan Thomas record was on the set. And I thought that my wife had put the record on. Come to find out, my four-year-old had put on his record, and I came into the room. She pointed to the record and said, "He knows what he's doing." Now, that's great. That's not intellectualizing.
Feeling.
An emotional reaction. So if there is no feeling, there cannot be great art. If the feeling is missing, just forget it. You'll never make it as an artist.
Are you on mute, Scott?
I am. I am not now. Good evening, late night poets. How's it going tonight? How are you, Pam?
I am doing great. I've got Christmas decorating done. It got up to 50 degrees today, which anybody that knows anything about the northwest part of the United States knows that 50 degrees this time of year is so nice. I got outside, went for a walk, did some Christmas shopping. The only bummer to my day is it was so warm for me that I ended up taking off my winter jacket, setting it on top of my cart that I drag with me to do grocery shopping since I walk everywhere. And at some point during my probably good 5 to 6 miles worth of walking all over the town, I dropped my jacket and was too sore and tired to go backtrack and try to find it. But that's okay.
Were you able to find it?
I will go tomorrow, see if I can find it. Otherwise, I'll just go to a secondhand store and buy another one, you know. And I figure, exactly. And how about you? How was your day today?
Well, I had to work, but other than that, it was pretty good. It's always about 50 degrees out here in the southwest of the United States, so I can't complain too much about our weather on an average day and stuff, but pretty good day. Looking forward to reading some excellent poems that we have on the list tonight, some very enjoyable poets and poems. And also just love the idea of covering Ray Bradbury stuff, an amazing writer who just has a magical touch with metaphors. And I just look forward to seeing people's interpretations of the idea of anti-technology and just Ray Bradbury in general. So.
Absolutely, absolutely. Me too. Yeah, he is a fascinating character. Had really amazing quotes offered up for food for thought. And I like the whole idea of the topic of anti-technology because it is fascinating how technology can offer up so much help and yet at the same time kind of be this downfall of humanity.
Yeah, it truly is the double-edged sword that they speak of, isn't it?
It truly is, yes. And I think, Ray Bradbury definitely had a great grasp of that. Well, you know, if you're ready, we do have two callers on hold that I can bring on to join us in the conversation and the poetry reading.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
All right. Well, first of all, I would like to welcome Miriam Kilmer. Welcome, Miriam. How's it going?
Good to be here.
Hi, Miriam. How are you?
Looking forward to things getting better. I hope you're all doing well.
Absolutely. And I hope things get better for you. And yeah. I'd also like to welcome Randy to the show. Welcome, Randy. Glad you could join us. How's it going?
Just fine. Glad to be here, and I hope everything goes well with the show. It looks like a lot of great poems lined up.
Yeah, look forward to having you on the show, Randy.
Thank you.
So one little story I have is, so I worked with this lady who one time went to a book signing of Bradbury's, and she used to just rave about him and talk about what just an amazing conversationalist he was, because they talked for quite a bit, I guess. And she got her book signed, and boy, every time anybody walked in the room, she wanted to talk about Ray Bradbury. So anyways, I stopped out with a neat little tidbit to throw in tonight.
Right.
He's a great guy, not just a great writer, but a great guy.
Yeah, you don't hear about, that combination doesn't always happen, you know.
Yeah.
But that's wonderful. So, Miriam, do you got any, what are your thoughts on technology?
Well, definitely a techie in some ways, and but also, you know, be very careful not to let it overtake my life. Like I have elected not to have my cell phone surgically implanted in my wrist.
Right?
Thank you. Right. Yeah.
I guess so.
There certainly are dangers involved, not just in the horrible things that can happen when the internet and other AI things are misused, but also just because technology can separate us from nature, and nature is so important to our well-being.
Absolutely.
One thing that Bradbury used to say as well, separate us from each other, you know, take us away from human interactions.
That is so true. I mean, you see it all the time, like family and friends sitting in the same room, looking at their individual devices. Yeah, so Bradbury definitely kind of saw that. He saw that one for sure.
Yep.
How about you, Andy?
Yep, I feel, I feel the same way, that technology is a two-edged sword. On the one hand, it's provided a lot of great things for us. But on the other hand, I think as a whole for humanity, it has made us weaker as individuals. We rely more on it. And as mentioned before, it's taken away our personal contact and eye-to-eye interaction with each other. And that has certainly been detrimental to all of us, I believe.
You know, I love the way you took that too, though, Randy, and talking about the fact that it's kind of made us all weaker. I mean, I've thought about that before myself, and, you know, kind of wondered, you know, where would we all be if all of a sudden all technology, like if there was some cataclysmic event and stuff and we all didn't have technology anymore and we had to live like people did 700 years ago. You know, I just almost can't imagine the majority of us being very good at that. So, like,
literally
kind of thing.
All of a sudden, all the people out in the country would be far better off than we are.
Oh, absolutely. We'd all be asking them for tips.
And
yeah, that's a really interesting take you had on it.
I just realized the poem I'm going to read tonight was prophetic, because I wrote this on December 2nd, and one of the lines says, "When hard drives crash." And yesterday, my hard drive crashed.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's not a good thing, but that's definitely very prophetic.
But, yeah, definitely not a good thing that the hard drive crashed. But, Scott, whenever you're ready, we can go ahead and move forward with the poetry.
Okay. Anytime you want to get us started, Pam, I think that'd be great.
All right. Well, Miriam and Randy, I know you both can't stay very long, but we appreciate you calling in. And I'll put Miriam's poem up first, Foolish Love and Lasting Treasure. And go ahead, Miriam, and give that a read for us, please.
Foolish Love and Lasting Treasure. We never learn until we know the folly of what once we knew. When hard drives crash, we realize the worth of pencils through and through. So store your fondest memories, reflections of your kindest acts, the thanks you give, the thanks you get, forgetting clutter, useless facts. Enjoying nature's twists and turns, breathe deep that lucid country air, and shun the city's lurid lights. Come with me. I will walk you there. Admit mistakes and faulty skills. Poems are made by fools like me. With Seneca and Avon's bard, proclaim what fools these mortals be. Explore the gains of time, not oil, by planting trees, recycling glass, and drawing power from the sun. Sustain the earth. Don't be an ass. And poem.
That's a great read, Miriam, and a great write as well. I'll go ahead and start us off on commenting on that. I am really glad you called in, Miriam. The way you read that was much better than I think I would have read it. And so, yeah, I really appreciate the way you put voice to it. Also love the intelligence of the write itself. The Shakespearean allusion to Midsummer Night's Dream. I really like that fourth stanza. Admit mistakes and faulty skills. Poems are made by fools like me. With Seneca and Avon's bard, proclaim what fools these mortals be. So I just think that's a really powerful stanza, really well written. Great statement made here in the creation of something really beautiful, the managing of all that is beautiful, including poetry. And just in general, that ending stanza suggesting the preservation of the world and not becoming an ass like Bottom was turned into, given a mule's head. So, yeah, great right here, Maria. Very much appreciate your contribution to the show.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Let's see here. And Randy, did you want to comment on Miriam's poem?
Yeah, sure. I thought it was a wonderful poem, and it brought out many of the things we were talking about before in a very wonderful form. So, story of fondest memories, reflections of your kindest acts, the thanks you give, the thanks you get, forgetting clutter, useless facts. With modern technology, we have a tendency to collect and store so many useless facts now that we are inundated with on a daily basis. And, we forget how, like the use of pencils and paper and all the simple things that used to be done and were the common acts of every day have been forgotten. And like you said, the last stanza sums it all together. Explore the gains of time, not oil, by planting trees, recycling glass, and drawing power from the sun. Sustain the earth. Don't be an ass. I thought that tied it all together very well. And it was very well written and read. And I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
So true. And great comment, Randy. Pam, did you want to comment on Miriam's poem?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, I have to say I like the bite that you have in the end line and your sense of humor with that, Miriam. And even though obviously this is a serious topic, but, I really like, of course, your rhyme and meter is always spot on and beautiful. But I like how you talk about getting away, or you write about getting away from technology, not being so dependent on it, and really learning to connect again with nature. Because I think we did used to have throughout history a deeper connection with nature, and we got farther and farther away from that. I know anybody who has, and nowadays anybody and everybody can take pictures with their phone. And so you'll find people going for walks and, taking out their phones and snapping pictures, which can be great, of course. I do that myself. I'm always snapping pictures with my phone or my Kindle Fire, especially if I see something like a beautiful, you know, picture of the river and the trees, especially in autumn. But then I have to remind myself, you know, put the phone down, put the Kindle Fire down, and actually look with my eyes. I really like enjoy nature's twists and turns, breathe deep that lucid country air, and shun the city lurid lights. Come with me, I will walk you there. Admit mistakes and faulty skills. Poems are made by fools like me, which, of course, was a nice nod to the, I'm blanking out on the name. I know, Joyce Kilmer, yes, I'm sorry, poem. And that was really cool. And, you know, I just, I really like what you have to say in this poem about the, you know, dependence on technology and the need to understand the importance of nature. So very well done.
Great comment, Pam. I love the way Pam was talking about, you know, look with your eyes and stuff and, you know, just enjoying nature and taking it in, which is so much a big part of what I think Miriam has in this poem. So just a great comment and a really great write on top of it, Miriam. So thanks again for that. And Pam, if you're ready for the next poem,
which my inspiration for the poem was from Ray Bradbury's statement from an interview when he said, you have to be able to write down your thoughts so that later you can see what a fool you were.
That's one of my favorite quotes from him. I tell students,
it wasn't
I'm a
one
teacher.
Of the, was in the, it was a quotation from an interview, and up towards the beginning of the contest description.
Yeah, and it literally is one of my favorite quotes from him. Actually, as a teacher, I talk to students about it and tell them the importance of them writing, so that we can all look back and we can see how we thought, you know, like if I write today, a year later, I can look back on it and look at how much I've grown or I've changed and those kinds of things. So that's really cool that you brought up that quote, Erin, because to me, that's just such a powerful thing that Bradbury says. So
well, yeah,
very
yeah.
good.
Absolutely. All right. Well, up next, we have your poem, Randy. So go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay. And my poem was based off the prompt number 12, poem by Bradbury, There Will Come Soft Rains. Left behind. It finally happened. An apocalyptic end of mankind, the war of all wars, leaving no homo sapien behind, to plunder and rape the earth, he called his domain, with machinery which shall facilitate man's reign. Now a strange new silence hovers over the land, the animals all delivered from man's heavy hand, and free to roam the earth, reclaiming it as home, amidst rubble and rusting skyscraper catacombs. The wildlife humbly rejoice at mankind's demise. Eagles soar higher. Old owls seem ever so wise. Giant redwoods no longer have to fear man's axe. Deer nervously watching for roaming wolf packs. As nature's looking forward to returning to power, atop the food chain, inch by inch, hour by hour, this new lease on life, the freshness of spring, from Moscow to New York, all the way to Beijing. Nature was keenly aware of man's ongoing war, its sounds and smells, which they couldn't ignore. Then came silence, heralding the end of mankind, and so man's legacy of death is all he left behind. End poem.
Very nice, Randy. Miriam, would you like to be the first one to comment on Randy's poem?
Sure. This is, it's really horrible to picture, and it should be, because that's the subject matter that you've chosen to think about. What we are doing to the earth is just utterly horrifying, and I am still clinging to hope that we will turn around and at least do our part so that the tiger will live one more day. But often things look so bad that it seems hopeless. So that it's very, very well expressed by Randy here.
Thank you.
Yeah. Nice comment there, Marianne. Pam, did you want to comment on Randy's poem as well?
Absolutely. Wonderful rhyming poem, Randy. Great choice of words in like with apocalyptic and homo sapien. And I like how this is has a science fiction feel, and yet we've gotten to that point where it truly is getting closer and closer to not being science fiction. This works really well with tonight's topic, but it also made me think of, and I know I'm slightly paraphrasing, but that George Carlin quote that says, don't worry about the earth will be fine. We're the ones that are going to be screwed, you know?
Yeah.
George Carlin is awesome. But, yeah, I really like how you speak on the rise and fall. You write about the rise and fall of mankind and how nature takes over where we have failed. You know, we weren't – basically, I always believe that no matter what your beliefs are, you know, that we are put here on this earth or created spontaneously, but whatever, but we need to be stewards of this earth. We need to take care of children. We need to take care of animals. We need to take care of nature. And when we can't do those things, the system falls apart. And I really like this all the way through, but especially now, a strange new silence hovers over the land, the animals all delivered from man's heavy hand, and free to roam the earth, reclaiming it as home amidst rubble and rusting skyscraper catacombs. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Yeah.
Thanks, Pam.
Great comment, Pam, and stuff. Yeah, I touching on what Pam was saying there and stuff, you know, I often wonder whether, you know, animals, not often wonder, but I kind of wonder reading this, whether animals really do consciously think of us as a negative to their existence and stuff, because in many ways we probably really are. So, but going back to just Randy's poem and everything, and I love the direction Randy decided to go with this, the doomsday approach to this, as Bradbury often wrote, in many ways making us believe we might actually cause our own demise. You know, so I think this really fits down the lines of something Bradbury would absolutely eat up. You know, I love the tightness of the rhyming, like Pam was saying. The rhythmic flow of the poem is really well done. Yeah, just like Bradbury would have written, this takes the negative take on what we might leave behind us. And, you know, it's kind of a sad commentary when we, you know, really reflect on that. So, but I did like the way he pulls us in at the very beginning. It finally happens in an apocalyptic end of mankind, the war of all wars, leaving no homo sapien behind to plunder and rape he called his domain with machinery which helped facilitate man's reign. Now a strange new silence hovers over the land, the animals all delivered from man's heavy hand. So, I mean, I love that. That just is such a great way to pull us into it, Randy, and really just a great contribution to the show, and I appreciate you coming on and reading it yourself, because I just think it's so much better hearing it directly from the poet. So, anyways, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Scott. I'd like to also say, you know, in relation to this poem, lots of times I watch a lot of nature shows, and they go down into South America and come across ruins that have been left there, you know, for hundreds or maybe thousands of years, and they come onto them. And you realize that once, you know, humans lived there, there was a thriving community, and now it's completely overtaken by nature, overgrown with plants and trees, animals roam about it and everything. And that kind of helped inspire this right that once man's gone, nature reclaims what once was man. So
that's interesting. So you actually go to like old, like Mayan ruins kind of things in the jungles of like South America kind of thing, or Mexico, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't gone there myself, but I mean, watching documentaries about them or shows where they go in and discover these ruins and ancient dwellings and stuff like that that have been completely overtaken again by nature. But man once lived there and ruled there. So I always find that kind of stuff interesting.
Yeah, I find it pretty compelling, too. I like to write about that kind of stuff, actually. So that's why I kind of wanted to hear you speak a little bit more about it. So very interesting stuff to me.
Thank you, Scott.
Uh-huh. Thank you. And I think if you want to go on to the next one, Pam, we're probably ready.
All right. Well, up next we have Funeral Eulogy by Chin T. And Scott, would you go ahead, please, and give that a read for us?
Sure, be glad to. Funeral Eulogy by Chin T. Into catacombs of true depth. After life's wild rhythms, blackened fathoms full of rue, travelers leave an evening blue. You must not mourn. Let morning arrive with an optimistic pride. Come evening after, you must not mourn. Let everyone arrive to share their love and laughter. Memento mori. My friends, breathe deeper. Keep in mind, both best and bastard are fools if against mortality they strive. For the departed, know that no beyond is found, now fondly ignited, now profound and spreading every soul fire's tendril. Our dread resound and roundabout like echoes. Crown are crossing over, promise to plant wisdom into a newer, more youthful soil. So should it grow, wisdom will flow. Despite a blight of doubt, deeper still breathe and do not water death. Instead, grow wise. You must not mourn. Allow your happiness to thrive. Defeat your dread. Don't fret. Fear not your friends. Memento mori. End poem. You there, Pam?
I am. I'm
okay.
Sorry. I didn't hear you say anything to me.
I didn't.
I apologize.
I'm sorry. It's my fault.
Oh,
okay.
I see how this works. You're expecting me to read your mind.
Yeah. Well, you're pretty good at it, actually. So, you know, I didn't think it was that much bad. Actually, Pam, would you like to be the first one to comment on Shinty's poem?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. This is a wonderful, intelligent, philosophical write, beautifully written. I like how he reminds us that death eventually comes to everyone, and we should live in the joy of the moment. A great use of repeating the phrase memento mori, which I'm always a stickler when it comes to repetition. It has to strengthen a poem somehow, but that's just me personally, you know. And I think that works here.
I agree.
And I don't know. I mean, it's beautiful all the way through, but I like how it says in this, come evening after, you must not mourn. Let everyone arrive to share the love and laughter. Memento mori. My friends, breathe deeper. Keep in mind both best and bastard are fools if against mortality they strive. For the departed know that no beyond is found, none now fondly ignited, now profound, and spreading every soul fire's tendril, our dead resound and round about like echoes. And to me, that part and this whole write in general speaks on the idea that we focus way too much on death. And yeah, death is something that can be a bit of a mystery. The thought of it can be scary, but when it becomes an obsession, we lose track of how we are supposed to appreciate what we have in life, what we're supposed to be celebrating. You know, so wonderful, right, and very well done.
That's a great comment, pal. Miriam, did you want to comment on Chinti's poem as well?
Well, it looks like both Randy and Miriam had to go, so as of right now, it's just us two turkeys.
Good enough, then. All right, so I guess I'll give my opinion then. Here we go. I love the distinctness of the diction choices throughout this poem. He has lots of really distinct word choices, and I really like it. The first stanza stands out for me. Into catacombs of true depth, after life's wild rhythms, blackened fathoms full of rue, travelers leave in evening blue. You must not mourn. Let morning arrive with an optimistic pride. I really like that internal rhyme as well, with the I sound and it's rhyming with pride there, arrive and pride. So yeah, those are really strong elements in that first stanza alongside of the distinctness. You know, the words like catacombs, blackened fathoms, full of rue, travelers leaving in evening blue, you must not mourn. I like the alliteration of the fathoms and full. Also adds to the sound quite a bit, I think, in that first stanza. There's just a lot of little sound devices there, I think. Also love how Chinti chose to write the message of leaving something behind for people that come after us and stuff. And so kind of like the idea that he took that take on this one, having, you know, one's life count for something. You know, and I think all of us that listen to this show and write for this show and are just on AP in general and everything, all obviously really enjoy writing and probably hope that someday somebody beyond our time will enjoy something we've written. So, you know, I just love the idea of leaving something behind for somebody else. So in this case, you know, he's talking about planting wisdom and leaving behind, you know, something better and, you know, the intelligence of something, which I think is right up the alley, actually, of the quote by Bradbury. So great job on the right, Chinti, and appreciate you writing for the show.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I do have to say how much I too really appreciate everyone who, you know, wrote for tonight's show, and definitely a great lineup of poetry. All right. And let's see, let me grab the next one. I was posting the show link for anybody who just came in the room. And so I have to go back and grab the poem link.
Okay, no problem. I think we have quite a bit of time, Pam.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. We have time for me to mosey back and forth.
That's a good one coming up.
Yep, it is. It is. The End of Books by Vicki Moore. And it goes like this. The internet started the end of books. No one wants to take that much time when they can find all they need online. People have forgotten the joy of fantasy. Now all they want is facts and knowledge. How to build a house? Look it up. Is the earth really round? Look it up. You can look up anything at all, but how do you know it's the truth? Technology simply offers a place to lie. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I like this poem by Vicki. Although it's free verse, I appreciate Vicki's awareness of sound. Like in the second and third lines, the assonance of the three long I sounds. I also love the last lines here. But how do you know it's the truth? Technology simply offers a place to lie, which, is unfortunately kind of sad but true. Too many people use the internet for bad, which again kind of goes right down the lines of what this whole thematic idea that Bradbury has kind of says, is that technology takes us down bad roads. The internet is obviously an amazing place and does so many awesome things as well, but it definitely leads to lots of bad things as well. And, people using it for intentional truth or dishonesty. So, I definitely appreciate the reference to the lack of truthfulness as well as the internet being a place that people do use to deceive. So, anyways, I appreciate how Vicki levies some criticism here on the internet. It fits right in with the show. So great write for the show. Appreciate your time in writing for us, Vicki.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And Pam, did you want to give a little shout out to Vicki as well?
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah, I like what she had to say about how we don't necessarily have an appreciation for books the way we used to. And, like we were talking about before, and I'll always say this, there's plenty of great things about technology. Honestly, I wouldn't know all of these amazing All Poetry and LNP people and doing these shows and meeting these amazing people if it wasn't for technology. So I'm so thankful for that. But at the same time, it also allows you to meet a lot of people you really wish you hadn't. And, and Vicki writes about that, and she writes about how how technology simply offers a place to lie. I thought that was a great ending line, and this does fit really well with the subject of the show. The thing is, though, I think, it's always been in human nature to lie. It's just, the internet made it a lot more available, unfortunately. And everybody's got an opinion, but wonderful brevity on the technology and how it can just so easily bring out some of the worst in people. So very well done.
Yeah, if people are looking for the worst, they'll find it. Well, no matter what they're doing. So good people are good people, and people looking to do bad will find a way to do it, whether it's on the internet or somewhere else. So
exactly.
Anyways, I think we all appreciate good people. So
we do. Yes.
And shall we take a look at our next one?
Sure, it is. June Bugging Phones 2024 by Omni. And is that, I know that's a Greek letter, but I don't know if it's Omni-I or Omni or whatever it is. I don't know. I apologize. But anyways.
Yeah, I would have just said Omni, but.
Omni, yes.
You caught more than I would have caught there.
Well, I actually used to study Greek, and I used to be able to say the entire alphabet and recognize every single letter, but it's been like a good 20 years, and I'm out of practice. But yes, June Bugging Phone 2024 by Omni. And Scott, go ahead, please, and give that a read.
All right. June Bugging Phones 2024 by Omni. In a minute, June bug phones will take flight, as breezy as a June bug out of sight. Bioengineered and sentient too, June bug phones will euphoriant you. What makes them tick and soar up high? OBS, operative bioengineered sentient fly. With June bug organs and 3D printing, the first flying phone is stunning. Investing in June bug phones is the way to go. The curtain's up now. It's time to show. June 2024, the month to peer into the magic of June bug phones, dear. Disclaimer, there, don't you fret, the survival demeanor of June bugs we did neglect. No atrocities, no vassalage to fear, just June bug phones, the minutes here. In poem. And Pam, did you want to comment on June bug and phones?
Absolutely. You know what? I enjoyed this one because I thought it was clever. I thought there was entertaining wordplay, wonderful humor. I like how he wrote this in almost kind of an advertisement, like those you know, commercials that you see at like 2 a.m. and, you know, trying to sell the June bug phones. I just thought that was, his presentation of it was great. Investing in June bug phones is the way to go. The curtain's up now. It's time to show. June 2024, the month to peer into the magic of June bug phones, dear. And for anybody who's not physically looking at this right, he actually put the registered trademark symbol right next to June bug phones. And so, which really adds to the humor and which, you know, really adds to the sardonic feel of the poem and trying to sell people on basically allowing the government to spy on them. So great use of humor to take a look at a serious subject. So very well done.
Yeah, I agree with you, Pam. The humorous marketing of a new device, you know, just a very clever write intended. You could pretty much picture him writing it with a big smile on his face and just, you know, I enjoyed the idea of him kicking it in the direction of an advertisement for a new technology, just a very playful nature he had in writing this poem. Like the rhyming aspect of the poem as well. In a minute, June bug phones will take flight as breezy as a June bug out of sight. Bioengineered and sentient too, June bug phones will euphoriant you. So just another aspect to it that I think kind of adds to the rhythm, the playfulness of it as well. So great write, and definitely appreciate you contributing to the show, Omni. So thanks again for that. And
absolutely.
Pam, think if you want, we could probably move on to the next one.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep, and this is Silent Suffering by Chess93. In shadows cast by towering disdain, a world obscured where apathies refrain, echoes loud a callous heart's reprieve, I glimpsed a truth sought solace to retrieve. Beneath city lights where dreams decay, homeless souls in silent disarray, a symphony of hunger, a mother's plea, their silent suffering beckoned me. The streets a canvas painted gray, injustice danced oblivious today, and I awakened from my tranquil slumber, felt the sting of conscience, a soulful thunder. No more the luxury to just exist, raise words, a catalyst, a fervent twist, to be bothered, a noble quest, a raging fire within my chest. The city's pulse, a rhythm stark, I pledged to embark on a fervent arc. Against the current I set my sail, for the hungry, the homeless, a warrior's tale. In pockets deep where shadows hide, I sought allies, compassion as my guide. Metaphors etched in deeds, not just in ink, rescued destinies from the abyss's brink. A soup kitchen rose, a beacon bright, fed hungry mouths, brought solace to the night. For every bothered heart, a ripple cast, a revolution born from apathy unmasked. So let us not be left alone. In every bothered heart, a seed is sown to tend the garden of empathy and nurture a world where all are free. End poem.
Beautiful read, Pam. On a beautiful poem. Like I say, I think that, you know, before I even talk about the poetic nature of it, just the overarching message of compassion and doing for others and stuff, I think is a very powerful aspect of this poem in itself, but also the quality of the writing. The word choice creates a tight rhyme scheme throughout this piece. The enjambment is another thing I kind of noticed from lines 2 to 3 is done really well as I think refrain was a great choice of where to break that line and stuff. So I love the inclusion of like Ray's name, referring to Bradbury, alluding to his words and him being an inspiration in this poem. So, yeah, it's just a really great poem altogether, I think. I love the sense of hope and duty to serve others. I just think it's a really powerful message that, you know, especially this time of year even, really. You know, it's definitely a time to think of doing well for others and contributing positively to society. So, you know, those aspects of this poem hit home for me. A really beautiful introductory stanza to this. In shadows cast by towering disdain, a world obscured where apathies refrain, echoes loud, a callous heart's reprieve. A glimpse of truth sought solace to retrieve. Beneath city lights where dreams decay, homeless souls in silent disarray, a symphony of hunger, a mother's plea, their silent suffering beckoned me. Very beautiful, right, Chess93. Appreciate you contributing to the show. It definitely, I think, adds a different twist, a different aspect to everything else we've kind of read tonight. So definitely appreciate you, right. And Pam, did you want to comment on Chess's writing?
Yeah. Well, oh, absolutely. Yes. You know, this is beautifully written. As you were saying, her word choices, her use of, you know, where she places her line breaks, which can be an important part of the structure of poetry. I think this is so beautiful how it is a different take because it focuses more on the humanity, and yet I think really all rights, the rights tonight focus on that because To me, anyways, I think that when we speak about being like technophobes, we speak about being fearful and cautious of technology, what we're really speaking about, and maybe it's different for everybody, but what I'm speaking about at least, is the idea of us losing our ability to care for other people, to take care of each other, to love, to have apathy, that we'll begin to lose our humanity as we distance from each other. I thought this was a beautiful, heartfelt write all the way through on reaching out to those in need. Where was it? I'm sorry. Well, there's a couple of different parts that stand out to me where, first of all, in pockets deep where shadows hide, I sought allies, compassion as my guide. Metaphors etched in deeds, not just in ink, rescued destinies from the abyss's brink. And then in the end stanza too, so let us not be left alone, in every bothered heart a seed is sown. I really like, where she talks about when the phrase metaphor etched in deeds. I like that because to me it's a great way to write the idea that actions should speak louder than words. And in every bothered heart, a seed is sown. That is an important line because a lot of times we don't take action until we really see that there's a problem. And sometimes when we're too busy focusing in on, the fun memes and the gossip and the food pictures and all that happens on social media, we forget the real world and we forget that there is a problem out there. There are people who are homeless. There are people who need help. And we have to see that not only with our eyes, but we have to see it with our heart and realize that we want to do something about it. So beautiful, right? And very well done.
Great commentary, Pam.
Yep, that was me standing on my soapbox for a few seconds. Well, just wait until we get a write that has to do with book burning. I will stand on my soapbox for that. That is an issue I feel very strongly about.
That's good, because I do too.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to the next one?
Yep, we have Droids Are People Too by Diane D. And Diane was nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud. So here we go.
Droids Are People Too by Diane D. Droids are walking among humans with chips inserted into their brains, starving humankind of its morality, guiding drones into valleys of pain, using devices to hide their emotions, with an app to let them keep score, using internet to find your location. AI leads us into the next world war. By Wi-Fi, robots will give you a number. There's no place on this earth to hide. You are marked by the devil himself, because you trust the trolls who lied. He's right, there's too many machines. Our humans never pick up the phone. You're caught in a rabbit hole of bots. And you Google to see if you're alone. We start war by pushing a send button, then hiding behind streaming firewalls. There is no place to hide in cyberspace, because technology has man by the balls. electronic soldiers blow your head off. You're just a heat patch on their radar. There's no such thing as motorized guilt. They will kill you, then brag of the scars. So be careful of what you wish for now. Those cyborgs are not what you dream. Be aware whose embedded links you click, because you can never trust the machine. End poem.
Wow. You know what? Before, I'm going to let you comment on this one first, Pam, but I did want to say I love the read. The mechanical, and I mean that in a positive way, the mechanical way that Diane read that poem was really powerful. Did you want to give comments first on it, Pam?
Absolutely. And yeah, I have to agree with you. That was, it worked really well. Now this is a great rhyming poem. I like how she writes about it had an epic feel to it. Epic and hard hitting, right, on machines that mankind created rising in power and taking over. And I think that's really the important part of this, is it's not just that, you know, because anytime you read a book or watch a movie where technology takes over, it didn't invent itself. We invent it. We let it get out of control. And while obviously we haven't reached this point yet, you know, droids are taking over, you know, we're not quite there yet. But, you know, we have allowed, you know, technology to really take over too much of what should be a human element. You know, poetry and art is an important part of that. And, you know, I know everybody has different opinions, and I've seen some, you know, really good AI artwork, or, you know, sometimes I'll look at the stuff that amuses me. Like yesterday I was looking at this article where AI generated what they thought every person, like the average person from every state looked like. And that was funny. But, you know, for the most part, when I see something like, you know, this is AI-inspired artwork, or this is AI-created artwork, or AI-created poetry, me personally, I'm like, but you're taking away from the human artist. You know, there are people who are given these gifts, and you're taking away from that. I really like where it says, using devices to hide their emotion with an app to let them keep score, using internet to find your location, AI leads us into the next world war. And we start war by pushing a send button, then hide in behind streaming firewalls. There is no place to hide in cyberspace because technology has man by the balls. It is so easy to track people nowadays, or for you to be tracked. But also, like, I like that between the anti-technology thing, she has that idea. She speaks also on those internet trolls and bullies who just so easily send out the nasty comments that they have to say and then hide behind their screens. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Yeah, I agree with you. Just very powerful. You know, I've known of Diane's writing for quite a while, as I know you have as well, Pam. Diane writes some really good stuff, but, you know, this is a really good piece. This hits on the theme really well. Her read of it was better than, no offense, Pam, than you or I would have read it. I just believe that the way she read it was so mechanical. It, you know, like she was trying to be robotic in reading it. And I just think it really highlights everything she was saying in this poem. So I like the rhythm as far as the writing itself. I like the rhythm and the meter she has in it, because she definitely keeps it. And she does throughout the whole piece. I like the end rhymes. I think those help to carry the piece forward. You know, overall, the message here, I think, you know, focusing in on the dangers of technology. And, you know, there's several places within this poem that are just really great lines. You know, I love the rabbit hole of bots line and stuff. That a stanza that you had read, Pam, really stood out to me as well, which was the third stanza, I think. When we look at it, it is, hang on a second. It is not the third stanza. It is, It is the fifth stanza. The fifth stanza, where it says, "We start war by pushing a send button and hiding behind screaming firewalls. There is no place to hide in cyberspace because technology has man by the balls." And I just think that's an in-your-face statement of, you know, all of this idea that, you know, technology does sort of have all of us. And it really does. You know, maybe not in the sense of a droid or whatever, some futuristic robot that thinks for itself and does all these kinds of things, but it does have us all by the balls, whether it's by the fact of it's, you know, we're just addicted to it, you know. It's shocking how people cannot put their phones down and they can't, you know, stay off the internet and just, you know, you name it. We're doing some technology at almost all times. It's watching TV. It's being on a blog talk, poetry, radio show. It's something, you know, and technology just really does have us all. And it is amazingly powerful stuff that is extremely beneficial. But, you know, I do like the idea that Bradbury cautions us to try to keep ourselves human, because, you know, that's what makes powerful stuff for all of us. You know, it's the feeling. And you were talking about how AI can write a poem, but, you know, what makes a poem is the emotion and the feeling that it draws out. And I just think that AI tends to, like, lack the emotion and the feeling a lot of times. So, you know, for me, the way human beings express themselves is what poetry is all about. So, and with that, I want to say thank you to Diane for writing for the show. It's a great poem, and your read was amazing. So, and if you want to try to go on to the next one, Pam, we could probably do that.
All right. Well, we have Erratic Technology by Gayathri Murthy. And go ahead, please, Scott, and give that a read.
Sure. Erratic Technology by Gayathri Murthy. That would be my guess at it. She gasped for life. They saved in time, thank God. The elevator worked. Technology, a boon. I was sick, dialed online faster than my mom. My lunch came home. Technology, a boon. I need to rush. No time to drive. SMS for a cab. I am already in the train. Technology, a boon. My sister is coming. I need leave. Mail my boss online. Am free for the day. Technology, a boon. All said and done, I checked my bill for the month's power. I faint in shock. Number so long. Is technology a boon? I send money to my sis and close my app. Quick came the reply in a dialogue box. Please change your SIM. It is not in your name. Is technology a boon? Shocked as I am, quickly dial customer care. It smiles at me in all sarcasm. The phone then says, please check the number you have dialed. I am stiff as a staff when I read my inbox. Your email is shared. Would you mind it, dear? Is technology a boon? With all my details, I get a mail. If you delay, I will be you, and you will go to hell. Puzzled as I am, with an Indian mind, relax a little, and I hear the bell. Online purchase of a copper bell. Ma'am, here's your bill. When was it ordered? I blink. He blinks. The delivery boy. Ma'am, give me the payment. And gets glued to my door. It is past noon when I settle the show and sit to write. The moment I open my account, my phone hangs and stills my head. I go to the bank and check my savings. A spooky statement of blank prints. They look at my face. Ma'am, who are you? Their eyes speak, heads nod. Are you new? I go neurotic every time I shop. There are revered stalkers at every other shop. How do they learn my day's moves? Oh, ma'am, this is not the one you were asking your mom, a strange voice tells. I turn back to see. She mimes to me our cochlear implants. We hear every word. Confused and tired, I search for my cab. They are sitting in it, some known and some unknown. As I wonder if technology is a boon or a real bane, making each one in a way insane. My mobile turns off, the cab is not seen, and am hanging midway in a software ring. Some stare, some stalk, many of them sing. They seem to know my every movement within. At last, I relax on the taxi seat. It feels so new. Brother, get us back home. I tell the chauffeur and he looks at me. Ma'am, tell me the way. I am different. I intently look. Yes, he seems new. I pay for a book and wait eagerly. A book on an old age and it arrives on time. Thanking my stars, I open the pack. How to Handle Babies is the book on my name. Never praise technology. Not at large. Gadgets are good when people are good. After all, softwares and robots are man-made stuff. I was so shocked when my friend's son chose to study on the phone. I asked him why. Auntie, it is a bore to sit for hours at school when everything you know we learn from the phone. We heard a boom and ran to the door. The transformer burst due to the overload. 3 days of power will be cut. What will you do now? I asked her son. He smiled and said, Auntie, we won't study. It will be fun. Her daughter came crying as her picture was spilled. When? She didn't know. It was their own house, their washroom was chipped. I saved her from hanging and called her mom. There's chaos here. My office gates are closed. They are all new. Someone like me is already in there. When God made man, he set his age. He made medicines and doctors to care. When man made gadgets, why didn't he make the antidote for every technical virus, the perverted stills and unwanted thrills? Would you really need a common Wi-Fi that makes you known to all unknown? I second Bradbury, a clairvoyant man. His wisdom words, not now, not then, ages past. He said, technology a bane, makes you insane in foam.
Great read there, Scott. And I am just going to step right in here and say, after that long read, I'm going to go straight into sharing my thoughts on the poem while you go ahead. And if you need to, take a few deep breaths and maybe drink a little water to help your throat there. Yes, that's what I figured as soon as you got about halfway through this poem, which, you know, sometimes long works. I mean, you know, for it, well, I should say especially works for this poet who put in their AN to justify the topic, I need to write an epic. You know, just let this brief message reach every man who thinks technology is always fun. Great AN. And, you know, some topics are like that. Sometimes, you know, we grab a hold of a kite string and we just have to run with it. Obviously, this is a very important subject to Gayrathri. I like how, to me, what they are doing, and I apologize, but they are doing is taking us through what appears to be their average day and how technology helps them, but it also hinders them. And that is the reality for many people, you know, that technology has taken over our lives. It has separated us from those that we love. And, you know, there's just and the asking of the question, I always say I do like questions. Not everybody does. I know that I've known people who say they don't like when questions are asked in poetry. I personally do because I feel it allows the reader to think along with you. Picking this apart. Okay, and the first part I come across that I like is, never praise technology, not at large. Gadgets are good when people are good. After all, softwares and robots are man-made stuff. And that takes me back to what you were talking about at the beginning of the show. Well, at some point I remember you mentioning, Scott, that, you know, there's always been good people and bad people, and good people will be good no matter what, and bad people will be bad no matter what. They'll always find somewhere. And I think that fits really well with that line. You know, gadgets are good when people are good. You know, but you got to look at the nature of people. I get the feeling she works in some sort of, I don't want to say customer service because, well, you know, she writes about 3 days of power will be cut. What will you do now? I asked her son. He smiled and said, Auntie, we won't study. It will be fun. Her daughter came home crying as her picture was stilled when she didn't know it was their own house. Their washroom was chipped. I don't know. Well, that part I actually kind of get the idea that they're talking to family. But, you know, I don't know. Like, you can see how there's this idea that technology allows you to communicate, but it doesn't necessarily allow you to connect with people. Let's see. Transformer burst due to the overload. You know, the more I look at that, and I think it's in part because, and it's not them, it's me. Honestly, a lot of times when lines aren't separated and a poem is so long, my mind tends to dig through little pieces at a time. But I see this idea of this household that is so obsessed with technology that it basically just short circuits everything. And I like how it seems to be a conversation between different generations, and you know, and how, you know, the younger generations especially depend a lot more on technology. You know, childhood is just a different thing nowadays. It's not going outside and playing as much as it used to be. And when God made man, he set his age. He made medicine and doctors to care. When man made gadgets, why didn't he make the antidote for every technical virus? I actually like that thought-provoking line because I think it's the kind of line that can spark conversation. Me, personally, I don't think we were prepared for, the amount of evil that was going to happen on the internet in its younger years, you know, as technology and the internet started to grow. But my answer to that question is just like human viruses, technical viruses keep changing. So we're basically, I think, and of course, I'm not a technical person. I'm very much, you know, it's got to be straightforward or I can't do it. But I imagine that, you know, because you always see antivirus stuff. But the problem is that technical viruses, just like human viruses, just keep changing to meet the demand of those who plan to use it. Of course, great ending. I second Bradbury, a clairvoyant man, his words of wisdom. Wonderful tribute lines to Bradbury and very well done.
Yeah, I agree. So many things that you said there. There's something really cool about this poem, and I'm going to see if I can kind of point it out. So scroll through it with me, Pam, and if you're listening online, you should look at the poem because, you know, it's talking early about the poem being a boon. Okay, and as you scroll through it, because she uses repetition really nicely in this poem, I think she does. She keeps asking you, now, you know, is it a boon? You know, technology is a boon. She can, you know, order lunch at home. You know, she can get herself a car to the train and, you know, all those kinds of things. And so she keeps talking about that. Notice the structure of the words on the page, how light and thin the lines are. But then when she gets to boon or gets to bane, where technology becomes heavy, notice what she does with her lines. And the rest of the poem is like, do you see what I'm saying, Pam?
I do. And you know what? I think that is a great observation there. And I can totally see that. I didn't before, but when you pointed it out, yes, you're right. The poem starts getting heavier and heavier in the width and length of the lines.
And I want to say that's intentional. I don't think that she accidentally did this. So I think that's a really great strategy here. So, you know, it's one thing I wanted to point out, you know, that you know, in the skill and the art of being a poet and stuff, that you know, she structured her words on the page in a way that just kind of carried the meaning of the poem with it. So, you know, anyways, that's just one little thing that kind of stuck out to me. Let me see if I can get back to my train of thought on other things because I didn't want to forget that comment. So, but let's see here. What else do I have to say about this? Because there's so much here, and it's really a great poem and stuff. Obviously, this is written by somebody from India, I believe. You could catch some of the subtleties in the language, the phrasing of the words and things like that. And, you know, so I believe it's more of an English England type of English that somebody would use in India. And so, you know, it's probably not proper of me to say, but a stiffer English, or probably the slang version of England's English, quite honestly. And so, you know, I tend to have that kind of a feel for this poem as well. It's more of a proper type of approach to it. Let's see, what else do I got to say about this one? Because there's still quite a bit. You know, I just love the whole thing. You know, some of the lines that kind of stick out to me. I read my inbox, your email is shared. Would you mind it, dear? Is technology a boon? with all my details. I get a mail. If you delay, I will be you and you will go to hell. And then it's right about that time that that expansion of the line starts happening. Puzzled as I am with an Indian mind, relax a little, and I hear the bell, online purchase of a copper bell. Ma'am, here's your bill. When was it ordered? I blink. He blinks, the delivery boy. Ma'am, give me the payment, as glued to my door. So, you know, and it's just, that's where I think it just kind of turns and becomes a much heavier negative technology poem. And so anyways, let's see, I didn't know I had a few other things on my mind, but I think I'm kind of skipping out on them a little bit. I guess overall, I really love this poem for this show. I just think that it hits on it in many different ways. And I think it shows a different side of poetic creativity that you don't just see in every poem and stuff. And so, you know, things that I think should be recognized about Girathi's poem. And hopefully I'm saying the name correctly. And with that, let's see here. I guess that's pretty much going to, because I don't want to drone on about nothingness. I want to have something really to say. And so I feel like I have something I wanted to say and I forgot it, but.
Well, it can always be put in writing, and we do have plenty of more poems to chew on. So up next, we have Phrenology versus Technology by Eric Svensson. And Eric was nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud. So let me find that. I know it's here. And here we go.
Phrenology versus technology. 10 intrepid fingers reconnoiter, combs through auburn rosetti curls, skullduggery to get the lay of the cranium crucible cradle, high forehead buttress ladles intelligence, finely knitted together bone provinces, many satellite states neatly sewed together, as if stitched by a master seamstress, which our beloved Earth Mother Mama certainly was, but she did Beyonce to plants, felt the halo, saw green gratitude's halo expand, taught her 7 children to dig deep, constant gardener, when drought danced dust devils, she'd scoop out bath water to witness precious plants. Terms of endearment, postcards from the edge, nature woman, she adamantly waltzed out on the limb, cried wolf when the first chemical insecticides and weed killers ceremoniously impregnated precious farmland in the 70s. You're poisoning the earth. In years to come, there'll be a gnash, clash, dash of ashen sackcloth teeth. Mistletoe and GMO-seeded misanthropy. Herbalist by nature. Gemini inserted on June 5th, 1918. We baby girls survived the Spanish flu beside her parents. Lamenter of beloved planet Earth's longest green mile death. Parting words before her death in 2009. My boy, people who believe in the future plant trees. End poem.
Very cool poem. Always appreciate Erica and his reads. Very distinct voice and also very distinct writer. So always appreciate his writes. And this, I definitely love all the imagery in the first stanza, high forehead, and it being a ladle of great intelligence. And also love the image of the skull, many satellite states sewn together. I think that's what he's referring to, is that the skull and its pieces coming together as your baby grows older. Love the sound of those words and their alliteration to the many satellite states sewn. Also like in the second stanza, the reference to Mother Earth and how she cares for life. Allusions such as Beyonce's halo, constant gardener, I think he has terms of endearment and postcards from the edge, and adds kind of an edgy tone with the allusion to the Green Mile death walk. So, yeah, I think my favorite line, though, here is the diction Eric uses and stuff when he says the, find it real quick, the Nash class dash of ashen sackcloth teeth. It's a, that's a great line. I really appreciate that one. So just a very skilled write, as Eric always does. And as always, a great SoundCloud as well. So thank you so much, Eric, for writing for the show. And Pam, did you want to comment on Eric's
Absolutely. I think his poem actually fits really well with the quote that he chose, and I won't read the whole thing, but, you know, the start of everyone must leave something behind when he dies, and the idea of, you know, taking care of the earth. But this, to me, is a wonderful, heartfelt tribute to his mother, who I believe, if I remember right, from other poems that he's written and shared this picture before, that's actually his mother, a picture of his mother in Africa, where him and his family live.
I could not figure out who, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, Pam, but I could not for the life of me figure out who this was about. You know, so that's very enlightening for you to let me know that that's who it was about, is his mother.
Well, it does help. And I could be wrong, but, you know, there are things like Eric, you know, I've listened to and read enough of his poetry that I do know he comes from a family of seven children. He's written about his mother before. But I like how this connects with the idea of how we need to take care of the earth. We need to listen to the earth. And I thought this was beautiful and heartfelt all the way through on, you know, those words of wisdom passed along and the sad destruction of the earth. But I have to say that my absolute favorite part was when he said, "Nature woman, she adamantly waltzed out on a limb, cried wolf when the first chemical insecticides and weed killers unceremoniously impregnated precious farmland in the 70s. You're poisoning the earth. In years to come, there'll be a Nash clash dash of ashen sackcloth teeth." And, you know, because, you know, farming is one of those things that nowadays depends a lot on technology, but sometimes technology is not in our favor. And back then, to have these insecticides and these weed killers, which were probably great for people who are farmers who are thinking, you know, our jobs are going to be so much easier. And for a woman to stand up and say, "Hey, this isn't right. This is the problem you're going to cause," I think was just shows what a courageous and spirited woman she was. And I think you can really see, you know, Eric's admiration and love for her. So very well done.
Very awesome. Okay.
All right. And the next poem I'm going to put up is your poem, which is Invention by S. Sharp.
Right.
And you were nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud. So here we go.
Invention. Greased chains of latitude churn the carcass of remembrance. Lungs suck in the abrasive air. Fires burn. Gears of existence slowly turn, tearing the fabric like skin from a prune, bludgeoning the ancient sky with a dull instrument. Pages burn in the streets of Berlin. Hatred, the oldest invention, plunges between the border of art and discovery. Waiting in the shadows of origin, there are no parallel lines, no place where light really exists in the dark corners of time. But independent thought smolders in the ashes. A cigarette burns at the butt. Oppression enters the vacuum where no fire can burn, suffocating the flame. Pen meets paper, a phoenix rises. Art breeds in tension, braiding darkness and light. Invention tethered to desideratum, like freedom to human thought. End
great
poem.
Read there, Scott. Yes. great read there. I'll just go ahead and jump straight into commenting, and then, of course, if there's anything you'd like to say about your poem. This is an amazing write, powerful imagery and metaphors. I like how you write about the burning of the books in Nazi Germany, but not just the burning of the books, but, you know, the destruction of art itself. I mean, you know, any books and any artwork, so much, you know, literature and artwork was lost. In Nazi Germany, because it was declared not what fit with their agenda. It was, you know, I mean, it's just a sad thing. And I'll be honest, I have books I won't read, but I never tell anybody else what to read or not to read. There's a freedom, you know, that people should and need to have to choose for themselves what they decide is right for them to read and what is not. And I really like where you say hatred, the oldest invention. I mean, because really, since practically the beginning of time, since the time that Cain hit Abel with a stone out of jealousy and rage, you know, hatred has existed, and it unfortunately continues to in current times, but independent thought smolders in the ashes. A cigarette burns at the butt. Oppression, that is just such clever wordplay. Enters the vacuum where no fire can burn, suffocating the flames. Pen meets paper. A phoenix rises. Art breeds intention. I really like how you speak on the phoenix rising, but you give it a different twist. It's not about an individual person, but rather the phoenix rising is the idea that no matter how much people try to suffocate free will and thought, it will eventually always come rising out of the ashes. So truly a powerful rite and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Yeah, for me, you pretty much hit on it. That's, you know, largely what I was aiming for, is the idea that no matter what you do, you can try to get rid of free thought. You can try to get rid of things you do not desire because you're trying to hold people down, but there's no way you will prevent it. There's just no way. It'll go underground for a while, and it'll eventually rise back up. So, you know, and like I say, you know, what you were talking about in the, you know, going back in Cain and Abel and all that kind of stuff, is that, you know, throughout all history and everything, you know, hatred and all of the negativity and stuff has existed forever. And so, like, invention is anything. and hatred is an invention too. So anyways, I'll let it go at that, and we'll let's take a look at the next one.
All right, we have Seek Not by Weaver of Dreams, and we have a SoundCloud for this, so here we go.
I stand amidst the seekers as tensions grow. Predict, they cry, their voices filled with fear. How can I predict the future when I am aware? Should I dare to look into that whirling vortex? It would be akin to my third eye being pierced by a silver needle, blinding the vanity of a man who would attempt to influence a vulnerable, fluid, nebulous, amorphous mass of might be. Change the now with valiant deeds and words. Build strong foundations upon which that future they are screaming for can be built. High above rancid layers left by a need to own and consume, they yearn to know what destiny will bring forth from the depths of time where shadows whisper. All I ask for is a voice of reason, loud and strong.
Wow. I love this. This is a great poem. I stand amidst the seekers as tensions grow. Predict, they cry, their voices filled with fear. How can I predict the future when I am aware? Should I dare to look into that whirling vortex? It would be akin to my third eye being pierced by a silver needle, blinding the vanity of a man who would attempt to influence a vulnerable, fluid, nebulous, amorphous mass of might be. Wow. That's a powerful start to a poem. I love that. Love the ending line of that as well. Just really powerful. Draws you in, just like a Ray Bradbury story does. It's just really powerful writing by Weaver. Love the overall message as well and the values embedded within this write. A voice of reason. Change the now with valiant deeds and words. Build strong foundations upon which that future they are screaming for can be built. High above rancid layers left by a need to own and consume. They yearn to know what destiny will bring forth from the depths of time where shadows whisper. All I ask for is a voice of reason, loud and strong. Great right here, Weaver. Very, very impressive. Just very powerful. Even Bradbury would probably be standing and applauding you. So probably would be thinking to himself, wow, I wish I'd written that one. So anyways, great read.
Yep.
Great read and a great write, Weaver.
Absolutely. I have to agree with you. This grabs your attention. Yeah, absolutely. I'll be happy to comment. This does grab your attention and keep it all the way through. I really like the first-person narrative and how she writes in the voice of someone who's a gifted seer, who can see the future but knows that the greed of humanity misuses her gift. And we are a society that can be very obsessed. We love our horoscopes. We love our whatever numbers that you call to, you know, the California psychics and all that. Not me personally, but, you know, obviously they're making sales somewhere. But I thought this was a brilliant write on those who want to know the future but refuse to do anything to change the present because they only want to know the future for their own selfish desires. They don't want to know the future so that they can prevent, you know, true evil from happening. This is amazing all the way through, but I really like the imagery of fluid, nebulous, amorphous mass of might be and rancid layers left by a need to own and consume. A powerful ending, from the depths of time where shadows whisper, all I ask for is a voice of reason, loud and strong. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's just a great write, Pam. You know? So, all right, so what do we have up next?
Up next, we have The Red Mare by Liquid Mind Forever, who was inspired by Prompt 3. The gardens I planted now have all died, and the newspaper articles written honoring my craftsmanship has long been archived. The beauty queen who ravished many has become wrinkled, and the awarded medal for fifth grade science project never survived. The tenderness upon my mother's face as she lay dying, with my hand outstretched through bed rails, steel the zeal with which I defended her as doctors shocked her, trying to reach and beseech her spirit from its ascension. They tried to steal the clients I helped in transforming their lives, the healing I revealed, countless hours I reeled as people squealed when I danced, entranced the masses, the lectures on the podium, the messages unsealed. Each model I instructed on the runway prior to the show advanced. The applause and acknowledgement from my peers for excellence at the seminar for the number of guests I hosted, the private meeting with my professor on my expedience, the surprise 60th birthday party for mom, all who toasted. But of all the good that once laid bare, no longer fares, fair weather turned to violent seas and much too much on sprees, a bitter cup of caustic gruel, a spool of woven tares, bear the brunt, a swordless hunt with tongues that disagrees. Oh, some may say and some may bray, it's gray or black or brown, but who'll remember my piece of the rock, my B&B renown? From across the seas they came to me and painted portraits too. By fireside our bonds were tied, but when I've died, few will remember the joy, the beauty, the zest of this fiery mare. They'll remember the fear, the tears, the caustic bite, fear laid bare. End poem.
That was a great read, Pam. Did you want me to comment on this one first? It's kind of a long read, so why don't I do that?
If you don't mind, yeah, that would be great.
All right, very good. This is a very good poem. I like it a lot. I love the personal touch here by Liquid Mind. It appears to be autobiographical in nature to me. Poem written with the idea of whether she has left something behind for, other people. You know, I think that's the quote that she's going after here. A very interesting tale told. She uses great rhythm and rhyme throughout this whole poem. I think the legacy here is her B&B, and you know, just how she says she has long since moved on from it, hoping someday or even now maybe people remember her for that part of her life. Seemingly a really important thing that she spent lots of her time curating. So my favorite stanza, I think, was the second to last one. Oh, some may say and some may bray, it's gray or black or brown, but who will remember my piece of the rock, my B&B renown? From across the seas they came to me and painted portraits too. By fireside our bonds were tied, but when I died too few. We'll remember the joy, the beauty, the zest of this fiery mare. They'll remember the fear, the tears, the caustic bite here laid bare. And it actually, this poem, in a lot of ways, especially with the internal rhyming and stuff going on, kind of reminds me of a ballad. And I can't swear to it that that's what she's aiming at, but, you know, with a ballad being a story poem that is very song-like, meant to be read aloud, I just think that in some way, shape, or form, it kind of falls down the lines of the ballad. And so, the internal rhyme, I think, is really powerful throughout this. I definitely really enjoyed that portion of it. It takes a lot to make that all come together, to work through a poem and carefully choose your words so that you can have that rhythm and stuff that she's creating throughout this poem. So a great, great sound device within this poem, I think. I also love, and I got to look real quick, I forget where I saw it at, but when you were reading it, I thought, oh, that, I wonder if she did that on purpose, and then I think she did. I love that she spelled peace, P-E-A-C-E, rather than P-I-E-C-E, even though, you know, P-I-E-C-E kind of goes there as well. So, and I'm trying to see if I can find where is that. It's in that second to last stanza that I was talking about. Oh, some may say and some may bray, it's gray or black or brown, but who will remember my piece of the rock? But then again, maybe that's the name of the thing. But I love that it's peace, as in calm and peaceful, rather than P-I-E-C-E. Although, you know, piece of the rock, you would also think that P-I-E-C-E could work there. So just another great play on words, probably the name of the actual B&B, which was also a great play on the words and naming her B&B. So anyways, great overall write. Definitely appreciated it. And thanks for writing for the show, Liquid Mind Forever. And Pam, do you want to comment?
Yes, and you know what? I liked your observation there. And, yeah, Deborah is definitely great when it comes to wordplay for metaphors, imagery, and inner and end rhyme. I did like your observation that this does have a ballad-type feel to it. To me, I mean, I think, and I always really like Deborah's writing, but this one in particular pulled at my heartstrings because it did seem to be a kind of a autobiographical write that had to me a beautiful and raw honesty, speaking on the twists and turns of life. Because I was in a similar situation with my own mother, the part about being there by her mother's side and standing up for her in her end of lifetime really touched my heart. I like the part that you quoted too, but I also really like where it says, but all the good that once laid bare no longer fares, fair weather turned to violent seas and much too much on sprees. I like that because fair weather turned to violent seas makes me think of that idea of fair weather friends. You know, and I think anybody whose life has taken some wrong turns or their health has, a lot of times when somebody goes from being a very much a go-getter, exuberant, you know, get things done type person to life falling apart, there's oftentimes underlying reasons that, you know, sometimes have to do with health, or physical complications or just, you know, sometimes things just go wrong, and that's when you find out who your fair weather friends are. That's when you find out who your friends are that, you know, are just there because what you can give to them rather than be there for you when you really need them. So just an amazing emotive write with powerful lines and very well done.
Yeah,
And I think we can fit in one more short one for tonight, if you'd like to do that.
Yeah, let's take on another one.
All right. Our last poem for the night is Book Ghosts by Garanwi. And go ahead, please, Scott, and give that a read.
All right. So, Book Ghosts by Garanwi. Reading with ghosts left on bookshelves of guilt, finding bookmarks of hope in some words, spelling a future of writing alone, out of control, looking for footsteps leading to books, avoiding soap operas on neon god screens, acted in lines of candy floss truths, bought and burned with strokes of ink and pen, writing coloring book pornography, listening to cynical facts of controlled fantasies wired from a monster in your hand, watching pages burn in smoking camouflage to hide the words from you. There's a pathway down the river of recall for traveling storytellers, as monks on caminos chanting psalms to save burnt books, to keep words alive and open minds set free from firemen's flames. End poem. And did you want to comment on this one first?
Absolutely. Amazing right here. Powerful imagery and metaphors. Really quite brilliant on the spirit of books. And I love that title, Book Ghosts. You know, the idea that those books that are burnt still leave their spirits behind. The spirit of books kept alive by those who understand the importance of truth and freedom. Oh my goodness, and so many wonderful lines, but I especially like spelling a future of writing alone, out of control, looking for footsteps leading to books, avoiding soap operas on neon god screens, acted in lines of candy floss truth. Candy floss truth, I love that because it speaks on the idea of those sugar-coated truths, when what we really need is the hard reality, the raw, brutal, and honest, you know, truth. And then bringing in at the end, as monks on caminos chanting psalms to save burnt books, to keep words alive and open minds. Amen to that. You got to, you know, have that open mind. You've got to keep words alive. And that's the absolute truth of it. So very well done.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's a really cool poem. You pointed out the same area I really liked a lot was that candy floss truth. But yeah, I also like right past it, the bought and burned with strokes of ink and pens, writing coloring book pornography. You know, just that image of coloring book pornography and kind of is kind of a humorous image in my head, frankly. But anyways, overall, it's just a great piece. It kind of hits down the hard lane that we were aiming for tonight with Bradbury and just everything about it. Kind of strikes me as down the lines of thematically Fahrenheit 451 and the burning of books and all of that kind of stuff. And I just love his message of, you know, us all kind of like keeping open minds and, you know, keeping the thought and the freedom of thought foremost in our thoughts. And, you know, like I say, I just think it's a great way to end the show, quite honestly. So hopefully we can do this again sometime, Pam.
Well, I hope so, because I had a lot of fun. And it was great hanging out with you, and a great show tonight, Scott.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a really good time. So I want to say thank you so much to Randy and Miriam for stopping in, reading their poems, and, you know, just everybody sharing your art with us and allowing us to read your poems. It was a great time, and hopefully we'll get to do this again sometime. So.